my family is filled with lawyers. I think people wanted me to be a lawyer. I didn't want to be a lawyer because I wanted people to believe me. And so my nephew's a lawyer, my cousins are lawyers, my uncles are lawyers. There's just a lot of lawyers in my family. And so I've been able to pick up things that literally happened inside a courtroom. So what I'm going to read to you are actual courtroom deposition written down. This is really what happened in a courtroom. You ready? Yeah. Ready? Yeah. Okay, good. What was the first thing your husband said to you that morning? He said, "Where am I, Kathy? And why did that upset you?" "Because my name is Susan." "When you were driving, what gear were you at the moment of impact?" "Gucci sweats and Reeboks." There's one here I can't read because there are a few people below the age of 12 in here. "What's your date of birth?" "July 18th. "What year?" "Every year." You think, who are these people? "How old is your son, the one that lives with you?" 38, 35, something like, I can't remember. "How long has he lived with you?" 45 years. "This particular medical condition, does it affect your memory at all?" "Yes, it does." "In what ways does it affect your memory?" "I forget things." "You forget things, okay. Can you give me an example of something you forgot?" "Now, doctor, isn't it true that when a person dies in his sleep, he doesn't know it until the next morning?" "Excuse me, son, did you actually pass the bar exam?" I love that. "Your youngest son, the 20-year-old, how old is he?" "Like your IQ, he's 20. "Here's this picture. Were you here? Were you there when the picture was taken?" "That's me." "Oh." Here's the last one. "Doctor, before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse?" "Yes." "Did you check for blood pressure?" "Yes." "How about breathing? Did you check for breathing?" "Yes." "So then is it possible that the patient was alive when you began the autopsy?" "Absolutely not." "How can you be so sure?" "Because his brain was sitting in a jar on my desk." "I see. But could the patient have been alive nonetheless?" He really said that. His answer was, "It's possible that he could have been alive and practicing law." Anyway, I love collecting things from my family. I got more, but we don't have time. I'm not going to have you turn there. I've been, for those that are here are going, okay, so who is he besides this guy that just got up front? So you may not have any history. I was born at an extremely early age. I was born in Rochester, New York, St. Mary's Hospital, 1954. Yes. Yeah, you can do the math. Yep, I am 40-something. I grew up in the Rochester area. I were an athlete. I said last night, you know, you look at me and you go, "Really? He was an athlete?" Yes, I was. I played pro soccer for a while. I was scheduled and slated for and given two full-ride scholarships for Villanova and William & Mary to train for the 76 Olympics in decathlon, which was won by Bruce Jenner at the time. So my world was set in one particular way. I got sideswiped because I literally jumped over one pit doing a triple jump. Then I jumped at the end of another pit, landed on a rock, my left ankle exploded, and all my scholarships went bye-bye. And I ended up going home depressed, because literally my future was in front of me. I did not give myself to academics. I should have, but I didn't do it. So if you're here and you can give yourself to something, do it. Don't wait because you do not know what tomorrow brings. If God's told you to do something, do it. If he's told you to wait, then wait. But if he hasn't told you to wait, then jump in, begin to do it, and ask, say, God, your grace needs to be with me. I'm here. I just want to be obedient. So I met the Lord at 19. My dad, actually, when I was 16 and I had gotten hurt, came in into my house with a guitar, handed me a guitar and said, since you can't run anymore, she can't do anything for a while. God, I was laid up. My ankle was larger than a football and just shredded. And so he handed me a guitar. I started playing guitar, got saved a couple years later, instantly put into a worship team because back in the early 70s in the Jesus movement, if you played or sang, you were in a music group. That's just how it was back then. Anybody remember the early Jesus movement? And yeah, remember that? Hey, back then, basically, if you had a pulse, you were a part of a team. And that's just kind of how it went. And so I was in a band that traveled quite a bit, ended up moving, got married, found my wife in Schenectady, New York. Yay, I love Schenectady, and came back to the Rochester area, pastored there for a number of years, moved to Kansas City and got involved in this church in Kansas City. This guy named Mike Bickle was the pastor. I became the worship pastor for 10 years. I was the worship pastor. And then he and I started this crazy thing on Sunday nights called the House of Prayer. And it was just the two of us. I led worship. He prayed. And my role was to raise up singers and musicians. His job was to be in charge of the whole thing. And we did this together for a number of years till the Lord said, I want you to move to Nashville. Your time here is done. So did that, moved to Nashville, was there for 11 years, and then I got an invitation to help a church out in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area. So I live in the Pennsylvania area now. As I said, I've been a worship leader since, I don't know, 1973, 74, somewhere in there. I love worship. I love the expression of worship. Worship to me is why we're created. I heard somebody say recently that I have to vehemently disagree. Said, if you don't like worship now, you're not going to like heaven. No. When you die and you go to heaven, it's not going to be, well, I didn't like it there, so. After you're done falling on your face before the Lord and seeing the cherubim and the seraphim and seeing the angels, and hearing the sounds and the cacophony of music and sounds of heaven and seeing old friends and how they're caught up, you won't be indifferent in heaven, okay? Can I just say that? You won't be indifferent. You won't be like you are now, and yet you will. When you come face to face, you know, there's one death, then the judgment, and then you be absent with the body is to be what? Present with the Lord. So when I make that jump, I leave behind all the things that triggered me as a churchgoer. Anybody got triggers from church? I do, and I was the pastor at the time. We do. And so one of the, I'll just tell you, I want to congratulate you on not letting triggers from past situations keep you from gathering, worshiping, and loving other people. Can you give yourselves a hand doing that? Just go ahead. Because there's reasons probably for almost everybody here why you shouldn't go to church anymore. Forget this, I'm not going to go. And I counsel people all the time that are just, they're ready to go. I said, so, you know, so many things have happened. Tell me. Well, they wouldn't let me play my new song. This is one I just heard recently. I love this. They wouldn't let me play my new song. Really? This gal was on the worship team. How was your song? The worship pastor didn't like it. I said, who likes it? My mother. How many people have you played it for? Just my mother and the worship pastor. So maybe the song needs to be worked on a little bit. Are you open to working on the song to make it something that maybe a congregation can sing? Do you realize that as a songwriter, I'm a songwriter, do you realize how the difference between a regular song you sing and a congregational song? There's a huge difference. a song that's going to take a group of people, put them together as one, and with one voice begin to sing, that's a different animal than, you know, just a song about your dog encouraging you by how he licks your face. You know, not that anybody's writing those songs. But so she couldn't, she was so mad, she said, no, the song is perfect. How many of you have ever seen American Idol? Okay. You ever watch the first couple of weeks of American Idol? that's my favorite part. Amazing Grace. Actually, they don't have answers to this. I'm sorry, but thank you very much. And then they get outside and they go, I can't believe that. And the mother always goes, but you were the best. You're the best. It's called blindness. And parents need to be blind to certain things. but don't encourage other areas. Well, I'm not getting to anything I'm supposed to get to. But I love worship. But I wrote a book with a guy named Jim Gall, James Gall. James Gall and I are buddies. We've known each other for years. My wife used to perm the back of his hair. You may not know who James Gall is. He's this prophetic guy. But back when mullets were in, we had a friend named Kim Clement who had this really curly hair, and he was really out there. And so James would say, hey, Laura, can you do my hair again? And so my wife would go over, and she'd perm the back of his hair so that he'd have waves like Kim Clement. Oh, it's so funny. So we wrote a book on worship together. And they said, you've been leading worship now for umpteen years. Give us an overview of what you've seen. And one of the things that I've seen, by the way, I love the fact that there are only four musicians up here tonight, and that was a full sound, wasn't it? We didn't need 15 musicians. You got a full sound with four musicians. And then she's singing harmony, and I listened. As a worship pastor, everybody for the first 5 years in the house of prayer had to go through me to get there. And so for 10 years as the worship pastor with Mike and in other places. So I'm used to listening and listening well within in the mix. Guitar player, I don't know where he is. Is he in here? Where is he? He was here. Okay. you might not know the different licks that he was playing, but he was playing some really good licks. Yeah. The bass player decided to play bass and not lead guitar. I love that. Some bass players are ex-guitar players who play lead guitar on the bass, and there is no bass. Okay? Right. Brian's keeping a perfect beat as I'm going. He's keeping his perfect beat. And then worship pastor, first worship singer, first. Where is he? What's his first name? Braden. And you don't have a CD yet. I'm going to hit you every time. When are you going to make something? That voice is awesome, and it's not being lost on God, but it's being lost on people at home. Okay? So ask the Lord to put together the funds and the situation. Just begin to ask him. I know you probably have, but get more earnest because you need to be heard outside these four walls. Okay. And whoever was singing harmony, perfect harmony. Where is she? Where is she? Perfect harmony. I love harmony, and I was listening. And there were a couple times it wasn't easy for you to get to the note, was it? But you got there every time. I just thought, good for you. Way to go. So anyway. I love worship, and I've been following worship over the years. And back in the early 70s, the songs were simple. I mean, really simple. And we didn't know much, so we combined a lot of hymns, and we had really nice, simple choruses. There was nothing complex. There was, unfortunately, in many places, a bad organ sound. I'm not against organs. They're great. But then one day, this guy started coming to our church, and he had this Hammond B3 organ. Now, I don't know if you know anything about Hammond B3 organ, but it's different. He used to be the organist for Otis Redding, who you may not know who Otis Redding is, but there's a song called Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, and he was the keyboard player for Otis Redding, and he's in our church of 200 people. It was so awesome. But you know what? It didn't make worship better. It was just a great sound, but it didn't enhance intimacy. Because music is supposed to help support and lead you toward intimacy. It's not to direct you to itself in and of itself. God created every instrument to have a particular sound that directs us to the personality of God. Every instrument is a reflection of one part of God's personality. So you've got my first instrument was the drums. So you've got a bass drum, and this bass drum is going like that. And what you never see is the right foot. Usually the right foot of the drummer is usually kicking this bass drum. It has to be on beat, because that thing right there, if that's off, everything's off. And so this bass drum is that part of God's nature that says, I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to press through until there is victory in your life. I'm with you till the end. You know, it's that warring part of God that isn't afraid to go to war. You know, God fights for us. God fights with us. And sometimes he fights against us, and it's not you so much. It's that thing you hold on to that God says, it's going to look like I'm fighting against them, but I'm fighting for their freedom. Right. And sometimes we hear the drum, he's fighting with us and for us, and yes, yes, good, good. And then he's unrelenting to fight against those things that rob us of our freedom. And then we don't like that part of God. This little flute that plays, it's the playfulness of God. It's the beauty. It's the high areas. It brings a trumpet sound. You know, it can be staccato or it can be elongated, this long sound. You mix them all together. And if you aren't a person that really likes orchestral music, I want to encourage you, find some orchestral music. You will find God. It will open up to you different aspects of God's personality and reasoning of who he is and why he does things. In 1 Chronicles 15, David is, in chapter 13, you know the story. David is wanting to bring the ark back to Jerusalem. David's just taken over, and he wants to bring the ark of the covenant back to Jerusalem. So he puts the ark, okay, you tell me the story. What's he put the ark on? A cart. And who does he have lead the cart? Oxen, right? So the Ark of the Covenant goes on a cart led by an animal. And somebody tries to steady it. They're killed. David's not happy. His buddy is dead. What's gone? Why did this have to happen? What did God say? And you'd have to go back into Exodus and you can read it. How did God want the Ark of the Covenant to be carried? On the shoulders of whom? Priests. What are priests? People. Right. So the weight of God's presence is to be carried by humans. Humanity is to carry God's presence. To pawn it off on a man-made object is to put God, have a man-made object, then carry God's presence. God doesn't want to be carried on what we make. God wants to be carried on what he made. And so often in life, we take worship from its initial purpose to be on our hearts, and we turn it into music, what we create. And we say, this is where God dwells. It's like, God doesn't dwell in music. God will show up. He'll reveal himself through different sounds. Chris, you're contradicting yourself. You just talked about orchestras. I'm talking about the things that God, the sounds that God allows to be made. But what I'm saying here is, we lower the place where we put God in our life, and we carry him along in that nice, comfortable place when he wants to be on our shoulders. He wants to be carried by us. You have a testimony. I don't have much of a testimony. I grew up, I was saved at 11 years old and baptized at 12, and there's your testimony. Can I tell you what God saved you from? Yeah, but I didn't get a chance. No, you didn't get a chance to almost die. Trust me. You have a testimony that can change people's lives. Carry it on your shoulders. Carry his presence here. That's what God was upset. He wasn't upset. He's not mad at this kid that reaches up. I just had a flash picture of a shift. And this is not for you. Your first name again is, I'm sorry, Braden. Okay, Braden. You're awesome. I love how you lead, but there's the tent pegs are going out. And God's going to give you different avenues and expressions than what you have been doing and are doing, and there's a realm of intimacy that He wants you to have to bring here. I that sounds pressure, and I don't mean it to be pressured. Don't pressure this man about anything, okay, what I just said. But you touched on it at the end in terms of intimacy, and I saw you carrying the ark. I had a glimpse of it. It was right over there, and I saw you carrying the ark. And what this means to me is that you're about ready to carry his presence in a different way. Don't lose what you have. Add what God wants. Okay? Otherwise, you're going to be different, and you're not supposed to. You have an authority that few people have in worship. Don't lose that. But I think God wants to, he's going to add, enlarge the tent pegs for you in the days ahead. Because I don't know why. So rather than make something up, I'm going to just shut up. Okay, is that okay? Okay, good. All right. the tabernacle of David was being carried in, and one of the things that why David? Why can't David just build this temple? Well, he had blood on his hands. Well, why was he so enamored with the tabernacle of David? It wasn't because Raiders of the Lost Ark says if you carry it, you're going to win every battle. He hadn't seen the movie yet. He hadn't come out yet. David knew the presence of God in the middle of his people makes a difference. And he didn't care what it looked like. That's why he could dance. People say he danced naked. David did not dance naked. At the end of it's 1 Chronicles 15 and 2 Samuel, I believe it's 6, going to chapter 7, that David dances before the Lord. And what he did was he removed, and this is why he's married to Saul's daughter, Michal, okay? He's married to this woman whose father is the king, has been the king, okay? Now he's dead. Now David's there, but my dad was the king, and now my husband's the king. Her life is about being the daughter or the wife of the king. So that's what gave her importance. And she looks out and she sees her husband, the new king, dancing like she's never seen him before. And people say, well, he's dancing naked. He wasn't. He was dancing without his kingly garments, and he put on priestly garments. That's the difference. The word there, the ephod, the word that's in Scripture and the word that's in Hebrew is he put on priestly garments. To put on priestly garments, you have to take off the kingly garments. So David's identity wasn't that he was the king. David's identity was, I'm a priest before the Lord. That's huge. Our identity in this life, what are you? And then you tell them what you do. And for so many people, prominence is in the title that you have for a job, or the amount of money that you have, the kind of car that you drive, the kind of house that you live in. Those are your kingly garments. Worship is about coming through these doors, taking your kingly garments, laying them aside, and putting on your priestly garments. Saying, you know what? I'm not that. I'm his son. I'm his daughter. And I'm a priest in the house of the Lord. I'm going to give my heart away like a priest should give his heart away. And you don't put the kingly garment back on. Oh, yeah, you take it to work, but you're always wearing that priestly garment. You're always aware of that. That's why worship is not about in this house. Worship is about a lifestyle of priestly garment. So if you're like, I don't know how high I can connect. I really love all these people around and the music and everything gets me going. Awesome. Awesome. Ask God to get creative to find a way to make it work for you. I did. I was working with Mike Bickle. I don't know. Has anybody ever heard of this guy named Mike Bickle? Okay. Mike is, he's crazy. I love Mike. He's the hardest working guy I know. And he'd be up at like 4 a.m. And then he'd work out. And then while he's working out, he would watch documentaries on the Civil War, World War I, and World War II. I know, what a way to start the day. And then he'd sit down, and then he'd read his Bible for an hour or 2 hours, and then, you know, he'd be at the 6 o'clock prayer meeting, and I'd be there, and he'd walk in, hey, how you doing, how you doing? And I'd walk in at 6 o'clock. Now, I'm a musician, laid back. Mike is he's not an A personality, he's a triple A personality. There's A, B, and C. Wow. That's Mike in the motorcycle world, okay? I, on the other hand, I'm not an A, B, or C. I'm an M for mellow. I'm M. And so it was like, it's hard for me to work with this guy because he's, you know, I'd walk in, hey, you are, hey, and I was the worship leader for 6 o'clock prayer meetings. It's like, oh, my Lord, for the love of God, help me. Now, people would never hear me sing that, but that was going through my veins. And so I decide, okay, enough of this. I'm going to get up at 4 a.m, and I'm going to start being like Mike. This is after a couple years of this. So I set my alarm for 4 a.m. The alarm goes off. I have no idea why my alarm is going off. You ever had that happen where you set your alarm, and then you have no clue why it's going off at this time? So it's going off. I'm going, what in the world? Oh, yes, that's right. It's 4. So I hit the alarm. Now, hold that spot, okay? Right there. A few years before, my cute little daughter came to me. Now, she's 37, but she was like 4 or 5. She came to me at the end of the day. She had bare feet on. She'd been playing outside. She came to me and she said, Dad, can I talk to you? It's like my 4-year-old, wow, you want to talk to me? Yeah. So I'm on the couch. She gets up. She puts her head right here. And I said, babe, what do you want to talk about? Here's about my day. Do you have a good day? I had a fun day. What'd you do today? We played in the forest. The forest was the 2 trees in the back of Liz's lawn. So in the middle of that, she goes to sleep. Now, how dare you go to sleep when you wanted to talk to me? So, of course, I picked her up and spanked her. No, I didn't. That's horrible. No, I thought you said he was a nice guy. No, I did. I just looked at her. She falls asleep. I just looked at her. And I'm looking at her eyes and her beautiful eyes and her eyelashes. And I'm touching her eyebrow. And I went down to her little earlobe and just touched her earlobe. It was so soft and so pretty. And her little nose. And went down to her hands. And they're like these little, you know, those tiny little pretzel rods that are just this. It's like, oh, don't break it. Just cute little things. And I went down to her feet, and I picked up her feet. It smelled like grass and dirt. How many had little kids? Remember that smell of grass and dirt? I love that smell. I began smelling it, and I pretended to chew on her feet. As my wife goes by, I'm going, she looks at me and goes, what are you doing? She said, I'm chewing on her toes. Of course, my wife knows me now after all these years. She goes, oh, okay. And she walks away. So I chew on her toes, and then I pick her up, and I bring her into the bedroom. And you know how little kids are when you're going to put them to sleep? They're asleep, but they're not fully asleep. So I said, just stand there, babe. So I take her shirt off. I said, put your hands up. And I take this little nightgown, and I put it over her, and I put her into bed. And I pray for her, and I go after her toes again. I pull her toes out. What are you doing? I'm chewing on your toes. She goes, oh, that's cute. And then she goes back to sleep and chewing on her toes. And all I can think of, Laura said, well, that was cute. And I said, I love those little toes. I just love her little toes. Okay? Scene done, fast forward. And now I'm back in my room. I woke up, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know where I am, how I got here. And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to pray. So I do the one thing that you shouldn't do when you're going to pray. I kneel down by the bed, and I make the bed kind of what I'm praying on. And I start, oh, Lord, you know how tired I am. I don't normally come to you at this time. I may have surprised you. But I love you. And 45 minutes later, when I woke up, there was a pile of drool on my bed. I did not last 1 minute in the presence of God. Actually, I was always in his presence, but I didn't last 1 minute in prayer. And I lifted my head up. I went, oh, God, I am so sorry. It's horrible. The first time I ever, ever decide to do this, I fall asleep. I'm so sorry. In the corner of my room, I heard a man's voice that said this, I love your little toes. And I flipped around. There's no one there. And then from that corner of the room, I heard this voice just the same. It was out loud. It said, I said, I love your little toes. And I whipped around and there's nobody there. And I'm thinking, where had I heard that before? Where have I heard I love your little toes? And I remembered, oh, I said that to my daughter who just wanted to be with me, but she was too tired and she fell asleep in my arms. I fell asleep in his arms. He was so happy I wanted to. And he didn't look at what I wasn't. He looked at what I was. He didn't look at what I didn't accomplish. He looked at what my heart wanted to do. I love your little toes. I just see him up there in heaven. Michael, look at that. Chris is getting up at 4 a.m. Oh, yeah, Lord, this will be good. Yeah. I mean, have you seen him at 5:45? Takes him 14 minutes to get to work. 1 minute at home, 14 on the drive. He walks in at 6. Just watch. I know what's going to happen. Oh, really? Okay, good. He's asleep. Lord, he's asleep. He's drooling. He said, I know. Isn't that cool? Well, what do you want me to do? Shall I slay him? Yeah. Sheath thy sword, my friend. Oh, what am I going to do? Let's go down. Oh, no. Phew, there we are. Look at Michael. Come here. Look at him drooling. Isn't he cute? Yes, he's cute, God. You made him. He's cute. Look at his toes. No, come here. No, Michael, come here. I want you to do this to his toes. There's no way I'm going to touch his toes. It's okay, but I love those little toes. He's waking up. I love those little toes. That's how he thinks of you. He loves when you commit and follow through. Don't get me wrong. I'm not telling you not to commit to something and not follow through. All right? I have 3 daughters. I have a wife. They all still like me and love me a lot. One of the ways they love me and like me a lot is I follow through with them. My friends, I had 3 invitations for lunch on Friday. Hey, what are you doing for lunch? I want to get with you. These are people I see all the time. Why? Because I follow through with my friends. Why? Because God follows through with me all the time. He's always faithful. He's always there. Listen, I don't worship to get God's affection. I worship because I have God's affection. I don't pray to get God's attention. I pray because I already have God's attention. So worshipers worship out of a place they already have. If you combine anxiousness or the desire to be closer to God with your worship, you've missed worship. Well, Chris, don't you want me to be closer? Let me ask you, ladies that have had children, how close is your three-month-old baby in the womb? How close is that to you? Is that close? Okay. Is it different at 5 months? Is it different in 7 months? Is it different in 8.5 months? I mean, it probably feels like it. I have never gone through pregnancy. I don't know. But here's the thing. You can't get closer to someone who's already in you. You can only know them better. If you think you can get closer, then your life is about works. You are working to gain the affection you have. Therefore, worship will be an extension of your works. And to many believers, worship is an act of work to gain God's attention and affection. And it's never meant to be. You can't get closer to someone who lives in you. I'll never leave you and forsake you. Well, I don't feel the Lord. Well, that certainly isn't his problem. Because he hasn't left you or forsaken you. Yeah, but this season he seems to be far away. He seems to be, but he's not. He's never. Your language to try to cope with dryness does not change God's position in your life. So I have to now cope differently with when I don't sense him, when I don't feel him, when it seems like it's a dry moment, when it seems like I'm not hearing from heaven. There are times, I mean, even recently, my wife and I were going, have you been hearing stuff from the Lord? I mean, what are you hearing? And she goes, it's dry. I said, me too. I said, thank God that he's not gone. God's presence is not determined by my feeling of his presence. Therefore, what I really wanted just to, and I'll land the plane because you get me talking and I'll talk for way too long, so I'm sorry. I just realized I still have 45 minutes and 1 second left. How are we doing on time? Yeah, we'll end this. So Jesus finds this woman at the well. He talks to her. If you haven't seen The Chosen, the one part where Jesus is at the woman at the well, it's just, it's incredible. It's an amazing scene that just adds so much. But I love that story. And he makes this two things. Number one, the Father is seeking worshipers. And the word worshiper there isn't just people that raise their hand in worship. It has relationship connotations to that Greek word. So he's seeking people that will reciprocate his love, is what that really means. I'm loving constantly. I'm looking for people that will reciprocate it and love me back. That's what he says. He's not looking for people to worship harder than the person in the other row. Worship's not a competition. Shouldn't be. It's you realizing his affection. He always initiates and we respond. He's always initiating affection. We just have to catch it and respond back to it. So the Father is seeking worship. And the other one says that he desires that we worship in spirit and in truth. And I love this. And when I've asked different worship leaders, because I've done schools on worship leading and songwriting, all sorts of things, I said, so what does it mean to be spirit and truth? And most people have, just kind of both ways to worship. What does that mean? What does it mean to spirit and truth? And so the easiest way I can do it and the fastest way I can land this thing is for everyone's life here. Worship, I believe, here's my belief, my interpretation of this verse that has helped me so much, okay? To worship in spirit and truth, I think of a flag and a flagpole. What's a flagpole like if you went by it every day and you just saw a flagpole that was stuck there in a bunch of cement foundation and just had nothing on it? What is your opinion of that flagpole? It's useless. It sits there. What's it doing? How about if I took a flag, a beautiful flag that you love, and I just threw the flag up into the air and let the wind take it? Is the flag doing what it's called to do? No. The flag has to be attached to a flagpole if they're both going to do that which they're called to do. What's the flagpole? It's a spirit and truth. The truth of who God is, the truth of his word. Ephesians chapter 3, to know the depth of his affection, the length, the width, the depth, the height, to go down and have a foundation in to know what? To know the love of Christ. It's not foundation in just information. It's foundation, according to Paul talking to the Ephesians, who, by the way, when you get to Revelation, they lost their first love. And here he is talking to them and said, you don't understand. You need a foundation in who God is and how he loves you. That will cement you in the ground forever. And then when you're cemented in the ground, then you can liberally fly the beauty and the grace and the holiness and the mercy of God. The flag of your life, founded and grounded, gives every bit of the flag that bit of where you can respect and you can say, I see his and her life this way because it's grounded. Without the grounding, the flag is murky. The flag grounded this way, the flag doesn't fly, it hangs. Without grounding at all, it goes over and the flag gets filled with dust and our lives become the same way because we just missed the foundation. What he's trying to go after here is, listen, and I'll just say it to be, I love, by the way, be love company. Be, just be. Don't work love company. And don't be workers company. Be somebody. Nothing you have to do to be. Right now I'm looking at you sitting there being. Okay? You can flail your arms all around. It won't make you be anymore. Love. Well, I'll tell you, I travel a lot. And what I don't see is what I saw when I walked in here. Ooh, you ready for this? A lot of you were in here really early. And you were like enjoying each other and loving each other. What was that about? That's so awesome. I see people coming in at the last minute. I actually have this thing as 10 ways to avoid community in church. And number 10 is come late and leave early. And you can go to every service and never have a relationship. But I come in here and the whole room here is packed. And it's a half hour before the church started. And there's little groups loving on each other, people praying for each other. Others holding hands, just enjoying and hugging. I'm going, wow, this is sweet. I love this. You guys are in a good place. Now I know this. You've had a shift in the last year. Is that right? Yeah. Let me go back to the first thing I said. I can't find it. What did I say? What was will not be again. Okay. I thought about it for Brian as I'm hearing it from the Lord. And then he said, no, it's for all of them too. I'll just say it again. What was will not be again. And that doesn't mean that something bad, even something good that happened. It's just new. Don't try to recreate good. Let God just be. And because he is good, it will be good. Don't try to worship to gain his affection. Worship because you have his affection. And just watch what he does here. Do me a favor, just close your eyes for a second. Jesus, I just thank you. I thank you for a wonderful group of people who are journeying, sojourning again in a new place, at a new time. And yet, after being here last year, the same spirit and the same beautiful spirit is here. It does not matter where this group travels to. It does not matter where this group meets. They're committed to being your children, to loving well, and to growing as the company of God that you've chosen them to be. So, Lord, just as an outside voice, but as this beloved son of yours, I just extend my hand and ask your blessing of increase and prosperity in friendship. Help people who've never been able to find those close friends Help them in this place find that brother or sister that takes them to another level in friendship, in the knowledge that they're loved for who they are. Lord, I ask for past memories in other places where you've been, and sometimes beautiful people hurt other beautiful people. And it's so sad, and the devil wants to take us out, but I ask that everyone here who's come from that place will never be taken out, but they'll go further in. Thank you for the worship that's here. We pray it would not just be within these four walls, but you give them creative ways to bless this entire countryside with the worship and the gift that you have given them. So thank you. Let them bless, continue. They already do, but let them continue to bless your name and put it first in Jesus' name.